This episode of the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters podcast is brought to you by the Podbean podcast app. The Podbean podcast app is the top available podcast app around. You can get instant updates of my new podcasts or others that you listen to directly to your app. It's free, easy to use, and gives you all the features you need to help discover new podcasts and even create your own. Whether you use an Android or iPhone device, this app is the podcast app for you. Get the Podbean podcast app now on Google Play or Apple's App Store and start enjoying more from the podcast that you love. This is the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters show, and it's certainly sweltering under the lights in the studio and sweltering on the streets of London this week. It's also sweltering, or at least the pressure's on, in the US presidential race, which is what we'll be focusing on today. It's certainly been an eventful week in the race for the White House. Hillary Clinton's collapse or fainting or whatever you want to define it as at the weekend certainly seems to have changed the tone of the presidential debate and has led many to believe that Donald Trump has a much better chance now of reaching the White House. Is that true? Or was it always the case that Donald Trump was better placed than we all thought? Or will Hillary Clinton still ultimately prevail? I'm going to be speaking to some experts on US politics today to find out more. Later in the show, I'll be talking to Federica Coco of the Financial Times. But first of all, today, I spoke to Stephen Shepherd of Politico to get his perspective on the race. Stephen is the chief polling analyst at Politico and also editor of Politico Caucus. So I thought he'd be an excellent sort of US voice to get the perspective on this race. And I started off by asking him what he thought that the impact of Hillary Clinton's health scare at the weekend would be. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
So the big story of the last week or so, or last few days, seems to have been Hillary Clinton's health. I mean, what do you think what impact might that have on the race, do you think?
Well, look, I think it basically adds two main things. One concerns her fitness for the office, and I'll leave that aside for now, and tackle the other one, which is the honest and trustworthy gap that she faces. Voters do not believe in the United States do not believe that Hillary Clinton is honest and trustworthy. We've seen that in poll after poll after poll. And the fact that she was diagnosed with this form of bacterial pneumonia 48 hours before she disclosed it, and that she only disclosed it after having this episode in Lower Manhattan on September 11th, I think reinforces for a lot of Americans that she is hiding something sometimes. And so it reinforces that. As far as her fitness and voters being concerned about her fitness to serve as president, I think she can do a lot to dispel that in the coming weeks. She is back, as we're speaking now, she is back on the campaign trail today in North Carolina. She will be in a week and a half side by side with Donald Trump on Long Island in the first debate, 90 minutes long, and she'll have an opportunity to prove her stamina and her energy level and her fitness when voters can look at her side by side compared to Donald Trump at that debate. So I think that if she does recover, and all indications are that she is recovering, that part of it will take care of itself.
So, I mean, let's look at the actual state of the race as we speak. So there seems to be polling coming thick and fast. I mean, we were talking off air about how every hour there seems to be a new poll coming out. I mean, what should us Brits be looking at in the polls, do you think?
Well, the first thing I would urge everyone to do is not to look at one poll and specifically. I would encourage everyone to look at the polling averages and the trends. And one of the things that we're seeing this week, for example, there are three new polls out in Ohio. Ohio has voted for the winner in every election, every quadrennial four-year election here in the United States since 1964. The three polls out this week in Ohio have Donald Trump leading by 5 points, 5 points, and now 3 points in a poll out as we speak on Thursday. In Iowa, Donald Trump in a new poll there is up 8 points. That's a big divergence from what we've seen, but could be the start of a new trend. We're seeing the race closing in Florida. Donald Trump up by 5 points in a poll out on Wednesday. I would encourage everyone to look at the trends here. Sometimes the individual polls in the states here in the United States, those aren't conducted as frequently as polls all across the country. And so those can be a bit of a lagging indicator sometimes, especially if you look at the polling averages. The polling average in Florida may include polls that were conducted 2-3 weeks ago, whereas the polling average nationally, since there are more national polls than there are polls in a specific state, that will be more of a leading indicator of where the race is headed. So it makes it the fact that we do our elections through this electoral college adds a little bit of complication, particularly when you're sitting here about 8 weeks from election day with a lot of time left on the clock. Sometimes you have to look at both the national polls to see where things are going just in the past week, but then also look at those state polls to see if it confirms that, that those same trends are occurring.
Mm. The lagging indicator is quite an interesting idea, isn't it? Because I think ever since Nate Silver's success in the past couple of presidential elections, there's been this assumption that don't look at the national picture because it's the states that actually decide the election. But it seems to me what you're saying is that actually the macro level polling is arguably just as important, maybe. I want to touch on Ohio a bit, because there is this sort of conventional wisdom, if you like, over here that, you know, whoever wins Ohio sort of will win the presidency, if you like. And I suppose that given the Electoral College is complicated, that's not necessarily true, although as you've indicated, it often is. If Hillary Clinton loses Ohio, I mean, how damaging is that for her candidacy? I mean, how small does her path to the presidency then become?
Well, it definitely... It's a must-win state for Donald Trump. It's not necessarily a must-win state for Hillary Clinton. One of the things I'll talk about, you mentioned Nate Silver, and one of the things that his model does at 538, which is very smart, is that it applies things that are going on nationally. So let's, in August, for example, when the race started to tighten after Hillary Clinton came out of the Democratic convention with this huge lead, his model, when the national polls were showing that tightening, but the state polls weren't really keeping up to date with the national polls, he was able to apply what was going on across the country and assume that it's also going on in the states, even if we don't have new polling there. So I think that's been helpful. As far as Ohio goes, it's worth 18 electoral votes. It's actually been declining in importance because of varying levels of population growth. Over the long term, Americans have been moving south and west in general in the country. And so Ohio has been losing sway in the Electoral College. It's still worth 18 electoral votes. That's the third most, really, of any real battleground state up for grabs. But Florida's worth 29. Pennsylvania's worth 20. And when you look at the math for Donald Trump, unless he can flip, I just went while we were sitting here and I created a map that shows... I gave each state to the person who led the last poll there. So I gave Donald Trump Ohio. I mentioned those three polls there. I gave Donald Trump Iowa. I mentioned the poll there. I gave Donald Trump Florida, even though an average of the last five polls shows it tied, because he led the most recent poll there. I gave Donald Trump one electoral vote from Maine. Even with Ohio and Florida and North Carolina all in Donald Trump's column, he's still four electoral votes shy of what he would need. So he needs to flip one more state. That state might be Pennsylvania, where there's 20 electoral votes. That obviously widens his path if he can win that. It might just be New Hampshire, which is just four electoral votes. It might be a Colorado or Virginia or Wisconsin or Michigan. But these are all states that have been pretty strong for Hillary Clinton so far. Basically, like I said, Hillary Clinton can win without Ohio. Donald Trump needs Ohio, and he needs a little bit more than he has now in order to get over the top.
Obviously, we've got the presidential debates fast approaching. You alluded to those earlier. I think there is this conventional wisdom in academic circles, at least, that the debates aren't usually anywhere near as important as maybe the media like to think they are in terms of determining who wins, not just in the States, but in Britain and other places too. Do you think that might be different in this election, just given how volatile things are?
There's a lot of volatility built in. You're absolutely right that in past elections, we overemphasize the importance of the debates. Look at the first debate 4 years ago. Mitt Romney came out of the gate. Barack Obama, President Obama, was not prepared for Mitt Romney to take some of the positions he did. He was really caught back on his heels. And in the polls immediately after that, Mitt Romney surged a little bit, but eventually those, first of all, there are three debates, and so there's opportunities to counter that momentum. But the other side of that is that those effects a lot of times are short-lived. We see the same thing with all the things that we think matter in elections, whether it's a gaffe that one of the candidates makes, whether it's advertising. We see these effects really when you look at the data, and a lot of political scientists do a great job at this. They really show that these things are not as important as we in the media sometimes make them out to be. That said, look, the debates will, I think, be more important this year. There's a certain amount of volatility built into this electorate, not just because the polls have closed, not just because Donald Trump may now be ahead in Ohio and Iowa and Florida and North Carolina, not just because Hillary Clinton's only up by 2 points in a CBS News New York Times poll out today as we speak, but because there are so many voters who are having trouble deciding between the two candidates. When you ask just the two candidates and you give the option of other or neither or undecided, a lot more voters are going into those columns than we've seen in recent elections. When you give the option of Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, the two most prominent third party candidates, a lot of voters, particularly younger voters, are moving into those columns and saying, no, I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson, who's a libertarian candidate, former two-term governor of Mexico. They're saying they're going to vote for Jill Stein. And that means Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, even though they're close, they're only in the low to mid 40 percentage point range. Neither candidate is really approaching a majority of the electorate. And that amount of volatility, third-party candidates, when we look at polls throughout history, they usually underperform their poll numbers on election day. Ross Perot in 1992 would be an exception to that, but he was in the race and out of the race and then back in the race again. They usually underperform, which means their supporters go somewhere. They go to one of the two major party candidates. They stay home entirely and aren't included in the vote count because they don't actually cast ballots. Things happen like that. And so that amount of volatility right now as we sit like 8 weeks away from election day, I think does raise the stakes a little bit for the debates. They're also going to be, I think, really highly watched in the United States. I know most television executives are expecting it's on every channel here in the United States, all the broadcast networks and many of the cable networks. And I think television executives are expecting a lot of Americans to tune in. So that also raises the stakes for them.
And the final question, as we sort of approach the final straight, if you like, in the election contest, where's your gut in terms of which way this one goes? Because the vibe I'm picking up from people is that, you know, a month or so ago, 2 months or so ago, almost regardless of what the forecast said, Trump was assumed to be dead in the water, or at least, you know, let's be honest, he's not going to win, really, is he? Whereas now there's this creeping feeling that this is actually a competitive race. And you mentioned earlier, if you just look at the polls, who's leading the state with the most recent poll, he's not far off at all. Could he win?
He absolutely could win. I mean, like I said, I just allocated the Electoral College really quickly, and I got Hillary Clinton 272 electoral votes, Donald Trump 266. That's very, very close. That's a New Hampshire, which is the smallest swing state as far as its share in the Electoral College, away from flipping from one party to the other. Mm-hmm. So this is rapidly approaching a toss-up race as we sit here now. That said, I think there are a lot of questions whether this most recent surge for Trump and most recent sag, really, more than anything for Hillary Clinton, is part of a longer-term trend that we've seen over the past 6 weeks, basically since her convention bounce, or whether it is a short-lived blip on the radar because of what was a really bad weekend for her, between her basket of deplorables comment on Friday night, which got a lot of press, and then what you saw on Sunday with her health scare in New York and the subsequent disclosure that she'd been diagnosed with pneumonia. I think there are some questions about whether this is just a temporary addition to what we've seen as a longer trend where the race has been closing, but it's a little artificially inflated because of what we've seen in the past week. I think as much as we're looking forward to that debate on September 26th, I think the polling between now and September 26th and on the eve of the debate is going to be very revealing. What is the true state of the race going into that debate? If we're sitting here 1 week from now and it still looks the same, or Donald Trump has closed further, then I think it's definitely a toss-up race. If Hillary Clinton bounces back a little bit now that she's getting back on the campaign trail, then I think she still maintains an edge, though certainly not an insurmountable one, going into that debate.
Fascinating stuff. Stephen Shepherd, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
That was Stephen Shepherd from Politico, a fascinating discussion there. I'm now joined by Federica Coco from the Financial Times, who's a statistics journalist there. Federica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you were listening in to that conversation there. I mean, what sort of things struck you from what Stephen was saying?
Well, it feels like maybe for the second time in the last 4 months, we're getting worried again about Trump winning. And my thoughts maybe are that this could be a good thing. Not Trump winning, but us being scared about it. So maybe that will trigger people, especially if it happens 2 weeks ahead of the election. It would trigger people to actually turn up at the ballot box, because I think one risk that the Hillary campaign is facing is that people might not go and vote for her, not just because they don't support the Democratic Party, but mostly because they just assume that she's going to win. So that problem of complacency might get resolved by people getting really paranoid about Trump winning. And that is a refrain of the campaign, not just in recent weeks, but in general, because there's this difference between the two candidates. There's high levels of enthusiasm for Trump and low levels of support, and vice versa, low enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton, the establishment candidate, but high support compared to...
It's interesting. There was a recent YouGov poll that had 51% of Americans think Clinton is going to win versus 29% think that Trump's going to win. So it certainly backs up what you're saying, that Americans almost feel quite complacent about this race, don't they?
Yeah, that's that is a concern. And I think it's... I'm complacent about Hillary Clinton winning. If, as I said, we get paranoid enough, US voters get paranoid enough about Trump winning, then it might trigger them to vote for her and not support a third-party candidate, for example, or just not go to vote. It might be good news for her.
But let's look at some of the data. I mean, we've got this slide on screen, but for the benefit of people listening in, the 538 folks who Stephen referenced, obviously Nate Silver's gang, but a much wider gang than just Nate Silver these days, they have this ongoing elections forecast, and they've got a couple of different ones, actually. One's just looking at the polls. There's another that looks at Polls Plus, I think they call it, but they factor in other data, such as economic data and such like. They're giving Trump anywhere between a sort of 35 to 40% chance of being the next president, which I imagine to many people will feel a lot higher than they might have expected. I mean, do you think that's an accurate reflection of his chances, or might they be better or worse?
I think both models that he uses sort of respond to the polls, and Hillary's had a pretty bad week with the healthcare, email leaks, and so on. In fact, basket of deplorables comment, which I actually thought might not be a coincidence that was brought up and that was actually sort of released to the media, because it's a comment I hear that she's been making quite often in the past few months. I was wondering, this was the first time that she made it at an event with the press, and I was wondering whether that was actually intentional, whether she might have wanted to get some media attention, make a comment that was a bit controversial, which is a tactic that he uses to get people riled up, to get them revved up and like sort of enthusiastic about this election, which is the problem that we see now in this window polls not really being in her favour.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, and I've said on this show recently that back in August and September, I was saying to everybody, look, Donald Trump's not going to win this, but we're going to be looking back in a year's time and we're going to be saying, why on earth did we ever think Donald Trump was seriously going to be the next president of the United States? And then I went to America for a week in August, that's where my wife's family's from, and I spent what was arguably a bad week for Donald Trump, for Hillary Clinton, sorry, there. She was off the media completely, almost, which we now probably know why. Donald Trump was going to Mexico. He was sort of talking about immigration all the time. The sort of content of the campaign seemed to be favouring him. I just wonder about this parallel that's sometimes drawn with the Brexit debate, where Remain seemed to be coasting to victory, and then all of a sudden the debate was about immigration, and the Remain side never seemed to sort of get to grips with that, never seemed to sort of fight back. And at the time, I was very sceptical when people made that parallel, because I thought, oh, come on, they're different countries, it's a completely different, one's a referendum, one's an election, it's completely different. But now I feel like the parallels are too sort of similar to ignore. I mean, what's your perspective on some of that sort of Brexit versus Trump comparison that some people make?
I definitely think that we see a lot of parallels, my theory is that we're seeing trends that don't just affect one country, but they affect the Western world, so the rise in populism, you know, the lack of trust in the establishment, the distrust of experts, and I mean, Hillary Clinton is the expert candidate here. She's a policy wonk. So I can definitely see the ties. It's a cliche, and I roll my eyes when I see the sort of comparison of, you know, Trump supporters are basically Brexit supporters. But there is a nugget of truth in that it reflects sort of wider trends, especially in the Western world, of this sort of distrust with politicians.
He called himself Mr. Brexit, didn't he?
Exactly. He christened himself Mr. Brexit. Although I think that was wishful thinking. He was thinking, well, you know, the EU referendum, the Leave campaign, you know, pulled an unlikely move. They won. Nobody expected them. Nobody expects me to vote. So I think that was why he was sort of crowning himself as Mr. Brexit. Mm.
I mean, I was looking at some of the other numbers, and I suppose it's worth holding our horses a little bit when we talk about Trump being the next president, because some of the numbers are pretty devastating for him. I mean, YouGov asked recently with The Economist, I think this poll was, whether Americans thought that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were ready to be commander-in-chief, and 58% said Trump was not ready to be commander-in-chief, 34% said that he was. Also in that poll, 60% said Trump is not qualified to be president, 59% said that he's not trustworthy. A lot's made of Hillary Clinton's trustworthiness, and we'll come to that, I think. So there's lots of bad numbers for him out there, isn't there? And I know that you've been looking at some numbers specifically around his sort of reputation amongst women voters. I mean, what do we learn from that?
So the reason I looked at that was because I was sort of disheartened by this, the fact that the lack of enthusiasm was a problem, because this is a historic election in many ways. Main one is that we're looking at the first female candidate and potentially the first female president. And so I thought I'd sort of zoom in zoom in female voters, see what was going on there, what had changed compared to previous elections, to see if there were any insights there. And in terms of female voters, who, by the way, are, since the 1980s, have had the highest turnout in the elections compared to men. Actually, I have a question for you. Do you know, amongst all the demographics, what demographic has the highest, registers the highest turnout, if you break it down by gender, income, race and education?
I don't know the answer to that.
Would you guess?
Well, who took the highest turnout? I would say given what you've just said about women, I would say probably older women over 65 and over, maybe, and possibly well-educated.
Right. So it's black women.
Okay.
In terms of that. And
so that's surprising, because that feels counterintuitive, because a lot of people talk about the problem with getting, I don't know if ethnic minority is the correct term, but non-white voters to turn up.
Well, apparently, it's not a problem in the US. Black people across all demographics have the highest turnout. They have a problem with Hispanics in the US. They have the lowest turnout. And so, yes, black women register the highest turnout. Black people with postgraduate degrees, basically, they're nearly at 100%. Mm. It's really interesting. So that was one thing that I took from it, which is, you know, good news for Hillary. In the article that Stephen wrote for Politico, he mentions, you know, the drive to get undecided voters, and suburban voters are the key swing group, which is presumably why in recent weeks he's come out with some sort of half-assed proposals to introduce paid maternity leave and tax cuts for childcare. Mm. So in this group, amongst white women, Clinton leads by five points, which is not a lot. You'd expect it to be more. But by comparison, Romney won that demographic in 2012 by 14 points. Mm. So that's good for her. In terms of white women with college degrees, Clinton leads by 10 points. So we're at a 50% to 40% split. In terms of white women without college degrees, Trump here leads by 17%.
So again, there's that education divide again, which we saw with the Brexit vote, and we're seeing again in the States, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, indeed. I mean, there's a gender divide as well, because if then we look at the education element of it, then with men without college degrees, he leads by 40 points. So there's splits on a lot of levels here.
Mm. I mean, like, looking at some of those demographics, you almost wonder how on earth this race can be competitive. I mean, let's move on to my topic, which I've picked for this week, which is Hillary Clinton's trustworthiness. Mm. And again, this was part of the reason why I came back from the States with a completely different perspective on the race than I went there with, because I just assumed, as a lot of Brits, I think it's no spoiler alert, think, oh, this was Donald Trump, this unbelievable joke candidate, this clown or whatever label you want to put to him, versus a really serious, credible, experienced Hillary Clinton who would wipe the floor with him. And then what I never fully appreciated, I must admit, even though I looked at the polling, was just how unpopular she is amongst certain demographics again. So you've outlined Donald Trump being, very unpopular with certain groups. She almost is, not quite, but almost as unpopular with certain groups too. And we've got some numbers here to sort of put to that. Her sort of unfavourable average is 56% unfavourable towards her, which is a little bit less than Trump, but not hugely. 60% think that she's not honest and trustworthy, which speaks again to what Stephen was saying earlier about the health issue. But having said that, one thing that she will sort of be grateful of is that, 50% think she's qualified to be president. 42% think she isn't. So it's not maybe as conclusive as we maybe thought. But when you compare that to Donald Trump, 31% think that he's qualified and 60% think he isn't. So it's not hard to see what her message is going to be, is it? She's going to be, I am the qualified commander-in-chief versus Donald Trump, and if you're risk-averse, you're going to sort of come towards me. But it's a difficult balancing act, because I don't know how you can undo 20-odd years of Clinton fatigue in 8 weeks. I don't think you can. You've got to sort of focus on what your strengths are and hopefully hope that they play out on the day. I mean, what do you think about sort of her campaign in the last 8 weeks and the things she's got to do to win?
I mean, obviously, I don't know. I'm in that camp that thinks the debates are going to be crucial. I mean, I sort of imagine the debates as, that Blackadder quote, I'd engage with you in a battle of wits, but I see you are unarmed. I mean, he knows nothing. I mean, I don't know. But obviously, I mean, likability is very important. It's important here in the US. They have a history of sort of picking the president that they would want to have a beer with. But, as you pointed out...
Whereas right now, they seem to just want to stay at home rather than have the beer.
Yeah, they don't like any of them. So in that sense, because this, nobody really is ahead, none of the candidates are ahead in terms of likability, then maybe the competence element should help. I don't know whether that's wishful thinking. It's possible. Mm. But you can't deny that it's not exactly like Trump is that likable, especially because his problem is that he can't really go beyond his base. Mm. He's not able to do that, which is why, as Stephen was pointing out, he will focus on those the core states and especially Ohio.
But it seems to be enough to make him competitive in Florida and Ohio, doesn't it? So I suppose that yeah. ceiling may be low, but it might be high enough. And one of the findings that worries me, I must say, is this. From a Clinton perspective, is the YouGov Economist poll again. Who do you think will do better in the debates? Or the debate, I should say, the one coming a week Monday. 45% said Hillary Clinton, 29% said Donald Trump. And granted, 26% said don't know. But
they probably don't care, I imagine. The don't know is probably like...
may not even watch it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think there's an element of disillusion, but...
There's an issue there, isn't there? If Hillary Clinton goes in and people think she's going to be better because this is her versus Donald Trump, and she isn't, for whatever reason, maybe just because the external political environment in 10 days' time, maybe there's a bit of terrorist attack somewhere, or there's something that doesn't make it a very easy debate for her to have, he can easily surpass expectations, can't he? And then suddenly she's on the back foot, and then the next 3 or 4 days of the campaign are about her being on the back foot. I mean... Stephen mentioned earlier about the Romney win over Obama in the first debate and how that was maybe overblown, but I wonder whether it would have been if other events hadn't sort of helped Obama get back on the front foot. I mean, what do you think about this sort of polling? Am I worrying unduly, do you think?
What sort of events happen after Romney?
The hurricanes?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the... they always have hurricanes, don't they? I just, I'm not sure. I might. It's hard to tell. It's hard to gauge what's going to happen. As I said, I don't think he's particularly good in debates. He gets really aggressive when challenged, not just by other candidates. I mean, obviously, he did well in the Republican primaries, but he didn't come across as a likable amongst the Republican group. The way that he challenged Megyn Kelly, for example, the things that he said about her. This is a wider public that we're talking about. This is beyond Republican voters, so it's a different environment.
Do you think he's changed his stance in the last few weeks? I mean, I wonder if this is just me. But
you know, he's been having more media training, clearly.
It feels like when he shook up his campaign staff in August, I was very sceptical. I thought, this is Donald Trump. You're not going to tell him anything about what to do.
Yeah.
But it just feels like ever since he had that shake up of his staff, his tone has completely changed. Even with Hillary Clinton's health scare, he said something like, oh, I hope she's okay. And he made reference to how he would release his health records, which didn't really come to pass, or hasn't so far as we record this. But he feels much more muted. And I just wonder whether this is an election where you can win by not being the other one, or not being your opponent. He's almost trying to dial it in a bit for the last 8 weeks and hope that's enough for him to prevail.
Yeah, however, did you watch that speech that he gave when he was outlining his economic policy? With ideas that were completely legitimate, like cutting corporate tax and so on. And he was very measured. He was reading off a script. He wasn't just talking colloquially, as he does most of the time. And I remember watching that and thinking, on the one hand, you know, part of my brain was watching it and thinking, oh, he's quite sensible. Actually, you know, he could come across as a legitimate candidate. And the other bit hearing hecklers, you know, heckling him and sort of delegitimizing him. And I was wondering, actually, maybe that colloquial bit, that thing where he comes across as really informal, that's his strength.
Yeah.
And when he tries to be sort of the competent candidate, he comes across as quite boring. So I don't know whether trying to be the policy wonk like Clinton will actually help him. So for me, it's an incognito. I don't know what's going to incognito. It's like an X. I don't know. It's unprecedented. This sort of debate. Yes, he knows how to push buttons on immigrants, on terrorists. Those sort of visceral feelings in the electorate that maybe an expert and a policy wonk just is not able to push for various reasons. But the two things are so different that I can't imagine. And I think overall maybe we're right that it's not going to have a massive impact. And what will happen is either people will get complacent and not turn up to vote because they're bored by this election, they're not enthusiastic, and that is going to be a real problem for Hillary. Or they're going to get scared because for some reason, like you say, something happens, he does well at the debates, 538 puts him at 70% odds of winning, and then people think, well, I'm just going to buck up and go and turn up at the ballot box.
Yeah, certainly lots to keep an eye out for in the final sort of 6 to 8 weeks of the campaign. And Federica Coca, thanks for joining me. That's all we've got time for this week's Political Betting Polling Matters show. A big thanks to my guest Stephen Shepherd of Politico earlier today. Certainly feels like the presidential race is entering the business phase, if you like. Stay tuned for the next couple of episodes where we'll be keeping an eye on what's going on in the polls there and also how both candidates approach the first presidential debate. You've been listening to the PoliticalBetting.com Polling Matters podcast, which is brought to you by the Podbean podcast app. The Podbean podcast app is the top podcast app around. You can get instant updates of your new favourite podcasts directly to your Podbean podcast app. It's free, easy to use, and lets you easily discover new podcasts that you love and also publish your own podcast too. Whether you use an Android device or an iPhone device, this app is the app for you. So get the new Podbean podcast app today on Google Play or Apple App Store. Enjoy more from the podcast that you love.